So welcome everyone. Thank you for coming this morning. So this will not be a lecture today, even though it sort of has a little feel like that, doesn't it? Nor will it be an indoctrination session, so don't worry. But this weekend, the board of directors of our community, the Florida Community of Mindfulness, had a retreat. And during the course of the retreat, we always begin with looking at our vision, our mission, our values. And in looking at them, and they were created by our community probably 6-7 years ago when we more formalized what we were about. These were created, and in re-looking at them again this weekend, I was really struck, as a kind of an outside observer, so to speak, of how really important they are and beautiful they are. So I wanted to share them with everyone this morning. You know, oftentimes our spiritual practice, our meditative practice, is about personal transformation, personal awakening, with a sense that a peaceful world can only be created by peaceful people. A nonviolent world can only be created by nonviolent people. A world where people are living from love and compassion can only be created by people who live that way. So understanding that we are each cell in the body of the world and the transformation of the world is dependent on our own personal transformation, that is often kind of an orientation we have. But yet, as human beings, as individuals, we come together with others. We come together in relationships of twos, threes, families, extended families. We come together in organizations. And especially we come together, for many people, in religious, spiritual clusters of individuals. And so therefore the transformation of the world, while it is very dependent on the transformation of us as individuals, it also is dependent on us when we come together to begin to create clusters of human beings that live according to these transformative values, right? Because if we can only manifest them as individuals, but we can't manifest them communally or collectively, then that does not much hold. That does not hold out much hope for a different world. And especially with what we have been subject to over these last 6 months or a year in our political process, et cetera, the need for communities and eventually societies that live according to values is so essential. I mean, even essential sounds weak, doesn't it? Because we know the issues that are facing our world are very much about survival in a certain way. So we here, Florida Community Mindfulness, we are just one cluster, and hopefully many, many, many clusters of human beings that want to transform the world. And I guess what I would also say before we take a look at them is, and for those of you who come here often, you know that one of the things I always talk about as the foundation of a spiritual life is aspiration, intention. If we do not know where we are going, if we do not know where we want to go, it's very hard to make clear choices as life unfolds, as day-to-day experience unfolds. But when we have a clear aspiration for our life, a clear intention for our life that not only guides our life, but also manifests in our life day to day, then we have some clear guidelines about how we want to show up. You know, show up at home, show up in our relationships, show up at work, show up in society. And again, the difference that we might say between, you know, in our society, we are very good at working worldly goals, right? Goals about career, goals about getting a relationship, goals about getting money, getting security, getting housing. I mean, the statement of our intentions and our goals for our worldly life are often very clear and dominant for us as individuals. But we are often less clear about our spiritual goals. And in a certain sense, while obviously food, clothing, shelter, meaningful work, etc., are a very important part of life, they ultimately do not give us real meaning and satisfaction. They do ultimately do not give us happiness. And those are other Dharma talks. I won't go into that today, but those of you who study and practice here know what we're talking about. So we need to find goals and values for our life that will really give it meaning and produce happiness and well-being for ourselves and for others. So is that kind of as a preamble? Let me take a look at this, let us take a look at the vision mission. So the vision, and again, I'm using just this as an example. I'm not propagating or propagandizing for the Florida Community of Mindfulness. I'm just really propagandizing for looking at life this way. And if you're involved in other types of groups and clusters and communities of all types, are we aware of this, right? So the vision is like the North Star. You know, it's sort of like you may be going on a two-week hike to a top of the mountain, but you know all the ups and downs and all the daily stuff is about to get us to the top of the mountain, okay? So in that sense, our ultimate vision, our biggest dream, okay, our most idealistic intention is to create a community, but eventually a world where principles of loving kindness, generosity, selflessness, that these principles that we live by manifest themselves in a world that is at peace, that is sustainable, takes care of the things that give it sustenance, doesn't waste, doesn't exploit, but nurtures, and wants very much to see human beings ending the suffering that they create for themselves, all the self-created sufferings that human beings create by the actions of their body, by the actions of their words, by the actions of their mind, and all the suffering that people create for others. Ideally, we would like that to end. Is that right? Yeah, see, so we're all in agreement, right? I think, you know, especially around Christmas, you know, peace on earth is everywhere, right? Right, even outside those places that are not very supportive of peace on earth, they also are singing the songs about peace on earth. So we know that at some level, most human beings would agree with this, wouldn't they? Right? Yeah, we want a world where people are at peace, where there's no suffering, where everybody has a sustainable way to live, right? So this is, you know, this vision is what unites us, I think, across all peoples and countries and groups. I mean, ideally, people would say, yeah, I would agree with that. So then, from that overall big vision that utopian vision, then comes something more specific, which is, what is our mission? You know, what role do we? And again, I'm talking here now our community, but also please think about your communities and you as an individual and your families and, you know. So what is our mission as a community to manifest and attain that utopian vision? Without any grandiosity. So we offer Buddhist teachings that are relevant to the realities of day-to-day life and lead to personal transformation. Florida Community Mindfulness provides a variety of educational and practice opportunities to support those who sincerely aspire to cultivate mindfulness, equanimity, compassion, and joyful, selfless service to others. Okay, so that's our mission, okay? If we were missionaries, that's what we would be. Missionaries go on missions. So that is our mission. That is sort of what this is all about. Okay, so before we even get into programs and all the activities, you know, you can go on the website and you can see all the activities that go on here. But it's all in the service of providing these opportunities, not just in terms of teachings, not just in terms of education, you know, learning and studying about the process of becoming a better human being and creating a better world, but we also practice it. Practice is equal to study. We cultivate mindfulness, equanimity, compassion, joyful, selfless service to others as that way forward toward that vision, right, of a peaceful, sustainable world where suffering is absent. Good. Now, all sounds good up to now, right? So how do we go about this, okay? You see, and it's, can you see even personally, this is, yeah, you know, we all would say, yes, I want to be this kind of person, I want that kind of relationship, I want that kind of, you know. But, you know, how do we go about doing that? See, that's often the piece that many of us miss. That's why many people feel this kind of gap, this space between our ideals, the kind of person we want to be, the kind of way we'd like to show up in the world, and actually the way we do it, right? So this is to kind of fill in that gap. Is that clear? And so also think about your own gaps if you think you have any. So we want to create an active and healthy, nourish and create a healthy, active Sangha community. Sangha, for those of you who don't know, Sangha is just a Buddhist word for the Buddhist community, the people who practice the Buddhist teachings. It's called Sangha. So we want to create a community where the teachings and other practice opportunities are shared in an environment of mindfulness and loving kindness under the guidance, well, forget him. But anyhow. So again, we're not, in other words, what this is saying, this is not, you know, this is not like an academic institution, right? Where you can go and you can study. And you know, you could go to an academic institution and study what? You could study Buddhism. You could take a course in meditation techniques. You could take a courses in philosophy. You could take a courses in psychology. You can take courses in ethics and morality, couldn't you? Yeah. But that's not what our mission is. That's not how we're approaching our mission. We're approaching it by creating a community, by nourishing a community that the way we go about everything we do is an environment of mindfulness and loving kindness. Can you see how it's kind of getting now? It's getting a little real, right? If you think about, for those of you who've been through academia, those of you who've been to high school, middle school, was that the clear mission of that educational institution, that all the teachings that were being presented, the fundamental approach was to nourish within the classroom this environment of mindfulness and loving kindness? Does anybody remember that? Did you see how we're beginning to diverge from worldly, when I say worldly, I mean like the way the world goes about these things, right? And what a difference this makes. I mean, if we think back of our educational experiences, what a difference that might have been, right? You know, and these aren't, if you think about it, these aren't necessarily Buddhist, right? These are very human, aren't they? But notice how absent they are from the world, from our educational system, from our work environments, from so many of our institutions, political institutions. I mean, what was, you know, as you entered the halls of Congress, let us nurture an environment of mindfulness and loving kindness. We laugh, don't we? Because unconsciously above these institutions are enshrined the opposite. Unfortunately. And that is because this is lacking. So we're beginning to see how we began with a common, you know, everybody want every, you know, nobody's against world peace. Right? Nobody's against the, you know, sustainability of the planet. You know, nobody would be against ending suffering for human beings. But as we begin to go, well, how do we go about that and what does that mean? You can all of a sudden see things are beginning to diverge. Right? Things are beginning to diverge. Okay? So, you know, values. Right? So what are the fundamental principles, the tenets that underlie our community, values. What is valuable? Right? Value is valuable. Most people would say, well, what's valuable? Money is valuable. Status is valuable. Celebrity, fame is valuable. Power is valuable, right? That's what's valuable. Reputation is valuable. So, please understand that our society has values, in other words, what it holds to be most of value. I mean, I'm not being too simplistic, am I? I mean, but it's important that we kind of stop and go, oh yeah. All the things we see going on, all the things we see in the paper, underneath that, these people have a set of values, conscious or unconscious, that they're living their life by. Oh yeah, these people in politics and in economics and in society, you know, they have values that they are manifesting in the world and working very hard. Unfortunately, most of them are working harder than us at manifesting their values in the world. Right? So we need to begin with kind of going, well, what are my values, right? So as a community of people who share a common vision and mission, what are the values that support that? Okay, and as I said, in the same way, we should also look at our lives. You know, again, we often have idealistically how we'd like to be, how we'd like our lives to be. We often think that we're going about it, and yet we may be surprised when we actually look at our actions, we may surprise at the way we look at our interactions, that we may not always be living according to the values, what is valuable that supports that way we want to be in the world and the way we want to be with others. Is there any questions so far before we begin to look at the values? Yeah, it's all kind of clear. But if there are any questions, anybody disagree with anything that's been said so far? Then we will continue. First value, we value awakening. Through the practices of mindfulness, deep understanding, wisdom, and compassion, we grow personally, heal psychologically, and transform our suffering into the flowering of an awakened being. We use Buddhist meditative practices to rediscover eternal truths about reality through direct investigation and experience, rather than through blind faith and dogma. Okay? So here's one of the things we value. We value the awakening of the person, right? And when we say awakening, we mean we're kind of waking up. We're awakening from a world, from a way of being in the world that creates suffering. We are awakening from a way of being in the world that creates conflict, unhappiness, even misery. Pain, emotion, we want to come out of that. We want to wake up from that bad dream. All right? Well, maybe we think about it that way. That for many of us, our lives are not good dreams. They're bad dreams. Right? They're not wholesome dreams. They're not happy dreams. Everybody knows about dreams and different kinds of dreams. So we want to wake up. How do we go about awakening? Through cultivation of understanding, wisdom, compassion. We want to grow. We want to transform. We want to heal the places in us that are wounded. We want to transform our suffering. We don't want to deny. We don't want to repress. We want to transform our suffering so it flowers. As Buddhism says, we want to, the lotus grows in the mud. Right? We want to take the mud of our suffering, the mud of our delusions, and in it we want to grow flowers. Right? Thich Nhat Hanh uses the example, we want to take a kitchen waste, which left by itself only rots and stinks, and we want to learn how to compost it so it can be healthy and we can grow vegetables and flowers in it. Okay. And again, in this community, the tradition we practice from is the Buddhist tradition. Luckily, it's not the only one out there. Hopefully, there are lots of traditions, lots of groups that are fostering this kind of awakening. But in our community, we practice in this tradition because we believe that in the 2,600 years of Buddhist experience with the human mind and with human beings, it is a very wise and pragmatic path of accomplishing these things. And we do it through direct experience. We don't do it through dogma. We don't do it through blind obedience. We do it, as the Buddha said, test it through your own experience. Test it through your own experience. You see if it works. Test it through your own logic, your own intellect. Does it make sense, these teachings? So this is not dogma, this is not blind faith, okay? No one has to accept anything that you cannot test through your own experience. So this is our first thing in our community that we value. So, first one. So again, as if I was a person sitting out there, I'd be asking myself, is that a prime value in my life? Do I value this awakening, this wanting to awake, to cultivate the wisdom and compassion, to grow personally, to heal myself psychologically, to transform my suffering? Is this a prime value in my life? even if I say so. When I look at how I live my life, is it congruent? You know, the reason in our community we have these, and the reason the board, you know, because we want to make sure that we're living by them, right? That they're not just something that we pull out once a year to look at, but these are to be lived. And as a community, we want to make sure that we're living them. So the first one is awakening. Second one is non-denominational Buddhism. Okay? So this is another value. We do not adhere dogmatically to any one tradition, any one sect, any one teaching of Buddhism. Buddhism, for those who are familiar with Buddhism, over the course of its thousands, 2,600 years of being in this world system, has developed many. It's very decentralized. There are many traditions, there are many lineages, there are many teachings. I mean, you know. Okay. So rather than going, I just take from this stream, we say it's a river of wisdom and understanding. We're practicing within the Mahayana Buddhism, Zen tradition, but this is the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh, Mahayana Zen. We take inspiration and guidance from the full breadth of Buddhist teachings. We are creative and experimental in our forms since we desire to be relevant and accessible to American culture, issues, and vernacular. So this is another thing we value. We're not transmitting Japanese Zen Buddhism. We're not transmitting Tibetan Buddhism, Thai Buddhism, Cambodian Buddhism, Chinese Buddhism, right? We are experimenting with the teachings and the practices of Buddhism to create what? American Buddhism. We're Americans, and we have our own culture, and we have our own way of speaking, and we have our own, and if you study Buddhism, you see that is what has gone on in every country. That is why we talk about Chinese Buddhism, Japanese Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, Thai Buddhism, because Buddhism has always taken on the flavor of the culture that it has entered. And so we are committed to respecting and deeply looking at and practicing the traditions of Buddhism, but within the context of American culture, dealing with American issues, and using the language. Our language, looking at things. And very much our language these days is very much what? Psychological. We are, anyhow. These are, I mean, each one of these is a separate Dharma talk. And we apply the teachings, not just, you know, one size fits all, but we apply the teachings in a creative way, to making sure that the teachings and the practices that we are transmitting to our members is appropriate. And then this really goes back to the Buddha in terms of what's called upaya, that if, again, we only have limited time, but if you look at the Buddha's teachings, if you ever study them, it could be very confusing because you go, gee, over here he says this, but over here he says that. Aren't these like, you see, there seems to be, well, the thing is the Buddha did not teach dogmatically. He didn't teach the same thing to everyone. He taught always from the same inner wisdom and understanding, but he taught according to the circumstances that he was teaching in. He gave teachings that were appropriate to the individuals that he was teaching, and always to be skillful. Skillful is that creative aspect, right? So if you think about in your school life, you might have had many teachers, but some just go blah 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 blah. They're just going to pass on, right? But some are very skillful, creative. They make the information interesting. They make it what? Relevant. The way they talk, they draw us in, right? Creative, upaya, skillful. So we hope to make our teachings and practices appropriate for the people who are coming here, and then to be skillful in how we apply them, recognizing the uniqueness of every individual. So second value was non-denominational Buddhism. Community. So this is another core value. Having the support and personal connection with a Sangha community of spiritual friends is a key element of our Buddhist practice. We seek to live our path with the support of a harmonious practice community. Sangha building isn't in itself a meaningful and deep practice which embodies interconnection instead of separateness. So again, for those of you who have been around in other types of groups, again, we are not just a group where people come, they sit by side, meditate together, and go home. Nice experience, everybody's got a nice smile on their face, right? But we want to create a community. We want to create connections, right? And so the creation of a community that lives in harmony and awareness is not just a kind of an ancillary a part of what we do, but it is our practice. Because creating a community that lives in harmony and awareness takes conscious intention and effort, right? Making sure there is harmony among individuals is very much what we want to create. Now, again, if we just come in once a week, bow, sit in silence, walk in silence, sit, listen to a Dharma talk in silence, go down and have a little tea for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes afterwards, how does everything look? Harmonious. But that's a no-brainer, right? You see? Because nobody's really interacting. Right? You see? It's easy to be harmonious with another human being if you only see him for an hour once a week. Right? Try living with them. You may notice, got to raise your game a little bit. Everybody know what I'm talking about. Okay. So we want to use the creation of community and relationships as a practice so we can really develop compassion, understanding, create a harmony among human beings that is based on interaction, problem solving, working together. Is that clear? So this is a unique a value of our community, that we value community. We're not just a bunch of people who practice the Buddhist path. We're not just a bunch of people who practice meditation side by side. We're a bunch of people who want to create a certain kind of community, a certain way of relationship, as a model for the world. I mean, what I say to people when they have little conflicts, I say, if you can't resolve this with all the tools you have, there's no hope for the world. Right? There's no hope for the world. You know? If you can't learn to be accepting and loving and kind, with the people here who basically kind of share more or less your same orientation or value, if you can't do it, there's no hope for the world. Right? So we take that very seriously. Community. And next, inclusiveness. Everybody, anybody's welcome. I mean, that's in Buddhism, the Buddha says what? Everybody's essentially a Buddha. That was the Buddha's realization. Everybody is a Buddha, has the potential to be a Buddha. It doesn't matter, the Buddha was in his own way quite radical in his home country of India, because He denied the caste system. Caste system was saying what? Some people are clean, some people are unclean, some people are high, some people are low. The Buddha rejected caste and accepted people from all castes within his community. And there are wonderful teachings where he actually, interacts with untouchables. Untouchables meant you didn't touch them. If you touch them or they touch you, even your shadow, their shadow fell on you, you'd be polluted. So going back to the Buddha's time, there is this acknowledgement that everyone is a Buddha. It doesn't matter your race or gender or class or anything. Or it doesn't matter, the Buddha took a serial killer into his sangha. Because he saw the innate nature. And that person transformed through the practice of entering into a healthy community. We recognize the Buddha nature in everybody. We are open to everyone and anyone. Anybody who wants to transform, anybody who wants to, who share our values, are more than welcome. Right, nobody asked you when you came in today whether you were a Buddhist, did they? No? Anybody ask you whether you were a member or non-member when you came in today? No. So inclusiveness is another one of those things we value. Mindful living, so this is another value. So we practice an engaged form of Buddhism, a Buddhism that is relevant to the lives of our members and the society we live in. We primarily, and again, mindful living, this kind of thing is very much comes out of the work of Thich Nhat Hanh. I think many of you are familiar with him. He really is the father, mother of engaged Buddhism in this century, 20th, 21st century. And he began in Vietnam seeing that traditional Buddhism was not that relevant to modern life, because it was not engaged in the lives of the followers. He called it temple Buddhism. People wanted to practice Buddhism, you went to the temple, right? Buddhism was something you did at the temple, something you practiced at the temple. And he really developed this idea that Buddhism has to be engaged in everyday life. So a Buddhism that is relevant to the lives of our members and the society in which we live. We primarily utilize the broad traditional teachings and practices applied in the context of modern life. As a community of lay practitioners, we learn how to live an awakened life in the midst of our relationships and everyday activities. I often say to people, who have children and families and jobs, I say, who think that's an obstacle, right, to their awakening, to their practice. I say, no. What better place to develop understanding, compassion, patience, loving kindness, acceptance, than in the midst of everyday life? You know, one could go off to a monastery, one could go off to a retreat center, one could go off to a hermitage, you know, where everything is controlled and everything is perfect and every, right? And you could think what? Well, I'm a hell of a practitioner. You know, my mind is so peaceful and calm. I'm just full of love for everybody and everything. You know, this is, right? So to me, a real practitioner is somebody who can show up in the midst of life as it is and manifest an awakened mind. Right? That's our ideal. We learn how to live an awakened life in the midst of our relationships and every activity. So our relationships, our everyday activity, our everyday mind is the place that we practice. We don't yearn for the meditation hall. We don't yearn for retreat. I mean, we use what goes on in the meditation hall, we use retreat as opportunities to develop ourselves, but we understand that as lay people, our transformation has to go on in the world, right? We have to be able to manifest people that they can lead, you know, a mindful, compassionate, caring life of value in the midst of the world, right? We are dedicated to leading a meaningful, open, and joyful life, guided by the five mindfulness trainings of the Plum Village tradition. And I think for those who have been coming know that we have been now once a month doing teachings on the five mindfulness trainings. We offer them formally twice a year and give classes. These are basically the fundamental kind of moral, ethical guidance for conduct, how we conduct ourselves in life. Thich Nhat Hanh called them that if we live by them, it ensures that a future for this planet is possible. Dalai Lama often talks this way about creating a culture of universal responsibility. Right? It's those kind of universal ethics that if all people live by, you know, not to kill, I mean, not to do harm, instant transformation in the world. Just by living by that one. So another core value is to live a mindful life in the midst of everyday life, an acknowledgement that our community is composed of lay people. We are not monks and nuns. That we live in the midst of the world, and we have what is called the full catastrophe of daily life. Right? We have it all. So we don't reject that. We accept that, and we learn how to transform that. Service. We help bring joy and reduce suffering by being of service to our families, our communities, our society. We practice selflessness and quote unquote love in action and give generously of our time and resources to those in need. When engaged in activities to benefit and heal our world, our actions are based on selflessness, mental and emotional calmness, nonviolence, compassion, and a deep acceptance of what is. So again, very much in our community, we value being of service. We encourage all our members to be of service to our community. I mean, we don't have lots of paid staff. We don't have much paid staff at all. So everything you see here is supported and nurtured by members who offer service, right? Joyful service. Because service in and of itself is a path of awakening. Because most of the time, most of our service is what might be called self-serving. Right? We are primarily focused on serving ourselves, our needs, our wants, our desires. Right? We're very good at serving ourselves. Which means, I mean, not that we shouldn't be taking care of ourselves, but that that focus always on self-service only increases our egocentricity, only increases our sense of separateness, only increases our the way we live in the world, just focused on me, right? So part of the development of an open, interconnected way of being in the world is through the practice of service. But as you notice, we don't just say, all right, everybody go out there and volunteer. You know, you go to a soup kitchen, you do this, you do literacy, right? That's not what this is. Because lots of people do that, don't they? And they may be still as egocentric as they ever were, as self-serving as they ever were. So service as a value for us is a practice. How we do service. When engaged in activities to benefit and heal our world, our actions are based on selflessness or non-self, mental and emotional calmness, non-violence, doing no harm, compassion, caring for the suffering from the heart of others, and a deep acceptance of what is. We don't do our service with anger. We don't do our service with frustration, irritation, impatience, right? All afflictive mind states. You know, we do our service with mental, emotional calmness, compassion, deep acceptance of what is. Okay, so again, the way we go about service is different than often the way it is thought of. Right? As I say, many people do volunteerism, many people do quote-unquote service, but it's not transformative. They don't see service as a practice of awakening, coming out of the dream of separateness. So service is another thing we value in our community. Deep sharing, deep listening. So this is a practice that has been cultivated, really put forth by Thich Nhat Hanh and his community in Plum Village. We create trust within our community of practitioners to encourage speaking from our hearts and listening to each other without judgment. This is a very powerful practice that we do our best to practice in our community and that we do our best to take into all our relationships. Learning to listen. Deep listening means we're listening below the surface. And we're listening not with the filters of our chatter, of our evaluations, of our assessment, you know. That's not deep listening. Deep listening means we're fully present 100% to the person speaking. And we have no ideas about what they're saying. We're just listening. Because we simply want to learn about them, who and what they are. Okay. Deep listening, below the surface. Is that clear? We keep our mouth shut. We don't offer advice right away. We don't butt in. We don't interrupt. And in our mind, we're not thinking about them and what they're saying. We're not formulating what our next reply is going to be. And we're not thinking about, you know, when's this person going to stop talking? We're not thinking about what we did next. We're not thinking. We listen 100%, deep listening. And when we share, we speak authentically. We don't craft our words. We're not doing it, without an awareness of the effect of our words. Right? We want to speak honestly, openly, but deeply, you know, from our authentic self, so to speak. So in our community, the practice of deep listening, deep sharing is a practice. And in all our interactions, again, how do human beings relate to each other primarily? We talk to one another, right? Anybody notice that? We talk to one another. That's how we communicate. So learning how to communicate in this way is very important in our community. Deep sharing, deep listening. Is this the last one? Okay, so this direct transmission. Our teachers have received authorization from the continuous lineage of the Buddha. The direct personal relationship between teacher and student is central to the true Dharma transmission within the Buddhist tradition. So this kind of speaks to the meditative tradition in Buddhism, going back to the Buddha. We might say that the transmission of the Buddha's teaching was something that was personal, right? If you read the sutras, if you read the teachings of the Buddha, the suttas, they're usually all about him talking to somebody, him interacting with somebody, right? So and especially in the meditative traditions, such as the Zen and the Great Perfection of the traditions, this continual, unbroken transmission from teacher to student has been going on for over 2,600 years. Okay, this is very interesting. There are not many things in this world that have that kind of authenticity, right? That, for example, my teacher who ordained me, Thich Nhat Hanh, he has his lineage. He has on paper, you know, this is his teacher, teacher, going back to China, teacher, going back to India, teacher, going back to the Buddha. Okay. You know, people just didn't go to school. These teachings and practices have been transmitted generation to generation to generation, from person to person. And it is an interactive process. And the reason we put this here is because, these days, many of the transmission of the teachings is not direct and interactive. Many people learning Dharma learn it through what? In the internet, right? Through books, through going to a retreat with 800 people, right? Where you hear a teacher give a talk. But how do you know what you've heard you're really understanding correctly? Right? How do you know if you're practicing correctly? How do you know if your understanding, if you're coming to any understanding insight, is really correct? I mean, how do we know that? As we know, mentoring, right, when we have a mentor, there's somebody who's checking us, right? I mean, most of us in our craft, in our work, we've had mentors. And the mentor is not just going to a talk by them, right? The mentor watched us in action, gave us feedback. And so that is something that I deeply value in my years of practice with my teachers. And we have made it a value in our community, right? That we want to know one another. We want to interact with one another. The teacher wants to know the student so they can help them, right? So like I'm up here talking, right? Now I may be saying the same words to everybody in this room, but I don't have the slightest idea what it's filtering through. Do I? Absolutely not. And I have no idea, what anybody's going to do with it. Right? And somebody may take it and go home and, who knows what they'll do with it and say, yeah, I got the teaching from the Florida Community of Mindfulness. But you see, if there's no checks and balances, if there's no feedback loop, how do you know that you've really heard what has been said today? And how do you know that you're really going to practice it the way it really can be practiced? It's not that you might not practice it, but how do you know you're really getting the full benefit from it? We don't know, do we? So this living, to me, this is essential. That why, until today, 2,600 years after the passing of the Buddha, not to say that there are lots of places in the world where Buddhism has become institutionalized, bureaucratized. But the fortunate thing, within the great tradition of Buddhism, many good teachers, many realized teachers are still alive and practicing. And where did they learn their Dharma from? Not from taking courses in Buddhism. Not from reading Buddhist books, because they've had a teacher that they've interacted with. So we want to keep that as long as we can alive in our community, this idea of direct transmission. Whew. All right. So that is the vision, mission, and value statement of our community. Again, I don't present it today to propagandize it in any way, but just to kind of inspire you, challenge you, all of us by that.